You are listening to This Book I Read, a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm. Welcome to This Book I Read, a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm, where we talk to authors about a book that has stuck with them, sometimes for good reasons, sometimes bad reasons, often both of those. My name is Chris, he, him, also known as C.M. Lowry. I like to read and write sci-fi, both good and bad sci-fi, probably, and recently was involved in releasing the anthology ISBN Coffee. And you can find out more about me on various social medias as at CM Lowry Author. You are not here to hear about me. We are excited to welcome Judith Mortimer onto the show, author of the Uncharted series. Hello.
Good morning.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Okay, well, I publish as J.A. Mortimer. I write light science fiction adventure, just with a little bit of romance. I have four books currently, which I've published myself. I'm also the co-author of a fantasy novel from Elsewhen Press called The Vanished Mage. And we have a second book coming from Elsewhen Press, which will be launched at the SF Worldcon in Glasgow.
Nice. And that, there's two of you, it's two authors on that book, isn't it?
There is, yes.
That's a really interesting way of doing things. Okay, well, we may come back to that. But why are you here on the show?
Well, there's this book I read.
Brilliant. What book have you brought for us and why?
I have brought The Hands of the Emperor by Victoria Goddard. I read and as voraciously as I write, so I read an awful lot of books, and I found in recent years that it's quite difficult to find something that really stands out. And this was a book that stood out so much that I promptly went off and read every other thing that the author had written.
Oh, that is a good sign. Give us a little bit of a synopsis. What's the book about?
Okay, well, it's technically a source, I would say it's a bromance. It's about two people who are in an interesting relationship, which is entirely platonic, remains platonic, and the author has said quite clearly that she intended it to be a relationship between two men, which was a relationship where they loved each other, but it was completely not sexual.
Nice.
So the two men concerned are an emperor and his secretary.
Nice. And what is the, obviously, you know, I mean, we don't really do, I wouldn't say we steer clear of spoilers in this podcast, but we don't necessarily kind of lay out every possible detail. But what, you know, so it's a relationship between two people, but what's the plot? What happens?
Well, it's bearing in mind that it's a 738 page paperback. Very little happens. It's cozy and lyrical and very joyful. It is about the secretary realizing that the emperor basically is very lonely. And yeah, as a result, he invites him to go on holiday for a period to his own homeland. Now, the secretary comes from an island culture, and the emperor very obviously is much more what we would regard as, as an emperor.
Yeah, well, yeah,
the imperial trappings and the bureaucracy. And the islander is very much your South Sea Polynesian style islander. So his culture is very, very different to the emperor's culture.
And probably quite refreshing to the emperor, I imagine, as a result.
Yeah, yeah. Well, both of them have an internal conflict. The emperor actually hates being the emperor and would like very much not to be the emperor, but also has a past which is hinted at in this book, but which comes out more in some of her other books. So I don't want to spoil that.
Well, yeah, I mean, in 900 pages or whatever it was, you know, you haven't really got time to fully explore a character's background, have you? Like.
Well, you would think not, but actually, no, it manages not, she manages not to, whilst at the same time having an incredibly engaging style that just draws you along. I reread this book because I knew I was going to do this podcast today, and it's taken me probably about 14 hours all told to read that. So that's quite good when you consider how long the book is, I think.
Yeah, no, I think I don't read lots of really thick ones, but they take me longer than that sometimes. Let's see.
It's that thick.
That's weighty. The hardback one of that would be like a, well, you could stop some doors blowing open and stuff with that. Would you like to bring a quote for us?
Okay, I will read you a short excerpt. I would hasten to add that I will probably mangle the names because they are not usual names.
The beauty of that is that I don't know how they're meant to be pronounced either, so you'll get away with it there.
I did try and check, but I don't think that the author has ever done a how-to-pronounce guide. Cleova did not like to think too much about the strange jumps in time that had happened in the early days after the fall. He blinked against the bright water. That was mostly right after the fall. It just seems like the days are long and full. After my lord finished the lights, that seemed to have been sorted. And it's the same amount of time here as there. Before, I think everyone wondered how I found the time to write to everyone, but the letters were further apart. Bertie grunted, all the more reason then for you to retire. He thought about the Fagandi Yibi, about the letters from his family and his friends that still asked him when he was coming home, albeit less overtly now than they had in the beginning. Thought of plunging deep into the world where he knew everyone and everyone knew him, where what he had done with his life was a hazy rumour from beyond the ring. Thought of the pleasure it would give his mother, his sister, his aunts, his uncles, his cousins, his friends, himself. Thought of how satisfied they would be for him to finally take his place where he ought to always have been. He thought of his lord, pacing in his study, bearing the weight of the world on his shoulders. Thought of how well they worked together, the enmeshing of respect and knowledge and good humour and experience. Thought of leaving his lord to the court. Thought of leaving his friends in Solara, Conju and Sir Rodin and Commander Omo. How none of them had families, had lost them in the fall. Thought of leaving his work undone, all those projects slowly, delicately, unobtrusively transforming the government according to his vision of what the world could be. Thought of his lord never failing to do his duty. Thought of his lord with no one to joke with him. Thought of losing that. He could not call it friendship, could he? That implied a kind of equality, and there was no equality possible between the sun on earth and anyone else. But call it a relationship, if that was permissible. He suppressed the wish that he dared call his radiancy his friend.
Nice. Yeah, I think, I just like the hesitancy of that kind of unveiling of that expressing of friendship. And like, even where you said how the author's like really highlighted that there isn't any kind of underlying like romantic vibe here, but there's still an awkwardness about that relationship coming about, isn't there?
Yes, indeed. That's exactly and you can see the secretary's tension between his home life, his culture, and the culture of the court. But he's also very good at his job. I have a nagging suspicion that one could argue that he's probably somewhere on the spectrum. He's a very good secretary, has a perfect memory, always has the right answer for everything, you know. People you would really hate to meet.
Yeah, I think all really, really good administrative people have not in a negative way, but just have some of the kind of, you know, a lot of the things we talk about with the spectrum, like ADHD. I actually had ADHD testing and I failed. I don't have ADHD, but one of the things they talk about is some of the stuff you see in ADHD, like, you know, loads and loads of crazy energy and creative ideas. Well, that's creativity and energy, you know. So actually, there's a lot of things on the spectrum that are positive. You know, it's just that sometimes they can cause a detriment to people's lives as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm drawn in by the friendship. Have you ever read The Four Loves by C.S. Lewis?
No, I don't. I think that's a C.S. Lewis I haven't read. I've obviously read the obvious ones, but not that one.
But he talks about like different types of love. But one of them he talks about is philios, which is like friend love, and actually when you really look at that, it's just as deep and involved and like hesitant and stuff as, you know, as romantic love as well. What's your favourite thing about the book, then?
Well, a number of reasons. As I said, it's very different. It doesn't fall into any of the structures easily that we are told we should be writing in as writers. And I don't like doing that myself. I don't write that way. Although it's very long, I found it very easy to read. The characters are delightful. I utterly sympathised with their problems, it's an ideal world in a way. It's a world where there's been some terrible disaster, which the author never entirely makes clear, the fall that was mentioned in the earlier section, and in fact hasn't made clear in all the other books that she's written around this subject. But it's a bureaucracy that works, and I think that's a rare thing. It's a world that you kind of would quite like to live in. It's people tend to be kind, they tend to be generous. The islanders in particular are a very open culture.
I mean, we met at the EasterCon panel talking about radical kindness and looking at things like looking at cozy sci-fi, because actually worlds that you would actually want to live in aren't very common in a lot of the fiction we read.
Absolutely. It always amuses me that if asked what world they would like to live in, an awful lot of people respond they want to live in the Harry Potter world, never realizing that they might be muggles.
Yep. Yeah. Or house elves.
Indeed.
Or, you know, like sorted into Slytherin. that would be a difficult situation. I did actually. The other thing that we do in as a company is we do a lot of role play games.
Yes.
We do the What is Role Play podcast. And there is a Dungeons and Dragons book, I think it's actually on the shelf behind me, called Strixhaven, which is basically, it does Dungeons and Dragons in a Harry Potter-esque world, like kind of magical school, and it hasn't got any rules in it for how you could be anything except wizards. So like, they just haven't thought of, like, you know, if you, so you can't be Hagrid, like, as in you can't, like, as in, you know. And I'm like, but Hagrid's
crazy.
Probably the best character. So yeah,
absolutely.
Moving on from Harry Potter.
I have role played myself, so I do fall into that category. However, such a long time ago that my first computer role playing games were the Gold Box games.
Okay. Yeah, we're quite a long time ago there. I mean, for a start,
yeah.
We're already a long time ago for most of our audience, because you're talking about games that came in a box.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed. And how I regret the passing of those days when I have a terrible internet signal and cannot download anything from Steam.
That is a shame. So the world there, it does sound interesting. I'm intrigued actually by the Polynesian South Sea Islands stuff as well, because that's always been a world that I found very interesting. Is there anything you struggle with the book at all?
I would say that a lot of people complain that it is slow and repetitive. And I have seen a lot of people complain about the platonic relationship, which is a bit sad since that was the author's intention. It's a self-published book, so there are one or two typos, but I found very, very few, and I'm fairly conscious of typos. I think it's quite easy to become frustrated with Cleopatra, or Kip, as his family know him, with his family, because they're very slow to understand what his role is in the wider world. And you can get a bit frustrated with not realizing or missing the point. But I think that's entirely appropriate, because their culture is such that they simply don't have the reference to understand what he has done by leaving his home and going into the empire and becoming this bureaucrat.
And he's actually, well, he's a really important bureaucrat as well, isn't he? Like he's obviously he's the secretary to the emperor, who's the sun on earth. So like, so actually in comparison to the sun on earth, he's nothing. But in terms of like the pyramid of bureaucracy, he's pretty high up it, like as the secretary.
Oh, yes, very definitely.
Do you think I would say
that the other thing that is a little frustrating with it is the world building, which a lot of it is alluded to rather than described. And the time differences that he Cleopatra made reference to are also a bit confusing. I think that it is clear that the author started thinking about these characters and this world when she was quite young, and didn't write the books until considerably later. Her parents spent some time in the Polynesian islands, and she grew up listening to their stories, which have obviously fed into the way that she wrote it. None of her characters are particularly European, which again is something very unusual about the book.
Have you ever?
Actually struggling to find things that I really dislike, but it's one of those books you either love or hate.
Actually think I did. I had a look through on Goodreads. Not that that is the be all and end all of book reviewing, but it can give you a bit of a flavour sometimes. And it was unusually dichotomous. Like it was unusually like 5-star reviews. This is the best thing ever. Like this is my favourite book ever, or my favourite book this year. And then about another half, I don't get it. It's too long and really repetitive. And like, there wasn't much, like there weren't a lot of 4-stars. There were like 2s and 5s, which is, I think, quite unique, actually.
Yeah, as I say, I think it is a book that you love or hate, and it there isn't a middle ground, really. And it is, if you go on to read her other work, you find that it's all interlinked, that she's written, I think, no books that don't link in somewhere. So that there are little Easter eggs where you'll suddenly go, oh, here's that character, or here's a reference to that character. So we are in this world that she's created in all her books.
And it ends up getting more and more lived in as you read through the other books. So even books from other series, like not from the same series.
Yeah, everything she's written is interrelated. And quite often there are sections of books which are the same, you know, a section of The Hands of the Emperor or the sequel to it, which is equally long, seen from a different point of view.
Okay, yeah.
So they cross over. You get the stories cross.
That can be very interesting. I think so it can be too much. So in some of the Old Man's War sequels by John Scalzi, there's one where he basically completely retells the whole story of one of the books from a different person's perspective in exactly the same setting. And it was interesting, but it was like it was the same story, like as in with a not massively different perspective. It was a bit of a strange one. I've been very attracted to Polynesian culture actually ever since being a teenager and reading the Kon-Tiki expedition. I don't know if you ever came across that. That's a real world book, but it kind of, because it's exploring such, for those who haven't read it, it's they had the idea that maybe the Polynesian islands were settled by people sailing sort of 5,000 miles across, I think, the Atlantic, Pacific, not good at oceans, but from basically from somewhere that everyone else said, there's no way that the people from South America could do that because they didn't have the technology. All they had were these rafts that can't go on the ocean. And so in like 1950, he went and made a balsa wood raft and then sailed 5,000 miles across the ocean to the Polynesian islands to prove a point. But there's quite a lot of anthropology and discussion of Polynesian culture sort of in those pages. Do you think the book could have been shorter?
I think it would have lost something if it had been shorter, though. I think that there are a couple of places where there is repetition, but it tends to be an odd paragraph. And in a book this long, in some ways, that just reminds you of something that happened earlier. Rather than feeling like a repetition, it's more of a reinforcement.
I think that is, I mean, that is the problem. I mean, you said it took you 14 hours to read, but my experience of reading isn't that I sit down for 14 hours and read a book. It's that I read...
Oh, I didn't read it in one go.
No, I get that, exactly. But because the reality is you read half an hour, then you fall asleep, then you wake, then you start reading the next night and you're like, oh, where exactly was I? You know, and so, yeah, 2 weeks in, you can kind of struggle to remember what happened with that one character 500 pages ago. So that can be an important narrative. I think that there's one more bit I want to just probe into, which is that so people were disappointed that it was platonic. Why does everything have to be romantic? Like me and you, we now have a platonic friendship. I assume, like, yeah, and that's fine, isn't it? I think most of our relationships.
You're a little young for me, dear.
no comment from me. Definitely there. But like most of our relationships in life are platonic, actually, the vast majority of them. So I don't see why that would be an issue.
Fan fiction. Yeah. It all comes down to fan fiction. I mean, I date from the days when fan fiction was typed onto stencils and duplicated on a giant machine. And, you know, we sold our copies at conventions, so long before the internet came along. And fan fiction... feeling that characters had to have a romantic relationship really started with the Kirk and Spock thing, hence the slash, which was the slash between Kirk and Spock. That's why it's called slash fiction. And it seemed that having done that, fandom felt that it had to do that with absolutely everybody. And it still to some extent feels that way, that people feel that in order to, I don't know, understand the characters in some way, they need to understand their sexuality, which personally I don't agree with, although I write romance, but I think it's perfectly possible to understand a relationship without it needing to be sexual.
Well, there's a call to action. If you fancy writing some J.A. Mortimer fan fiction, turning all of the romance platonic. There we go. That's your option. I think I haven't read a lot of fan fiction. Because also my experience of fan fiction has been like some like unnecessarily smutty fan fiction of like kind of let's just take this as erotic as possible. But one that I did like, and really not focusing on the work of a particular person who we don't talk about very much, but Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality was a really interesting book for me, because what they did is they changed the premise of, instead of Harry being raised by people who didn't love him, he was raised by like a maths professor and like a physics instructor. And so when he approaches the world as a world of magic, he just comes at it with a totally different mindset. And so I think that's where fan fiction can be really interesting, is different, you know, it's coming with a very different angle on things rather than, well, I suppose it is a different angle, adding romance, isn't it? If people enjoyed this, and I know what your first recommendation is going to be, which is read everything else that Victoria Goddard has written. But what else would you, what would you say people should hunt out for a read if they've enjoyed this?
Well, one of the books that it seems to get compared with very frequently is Sarah Manette's Goblin Emperor, which has a similar central character, I think. Other books that are kind, and I think we've got to go with Travis Baudry's Legends and Lattes. Juliet McKenna's Green Man series are actually, I had this discussion with her after a panel at Eastercon, that Dan is actually a kind character in that he is very large and looming and deals with things not with violence, but with words. And I think a book where the solution is to talk about things is always good.
Yeah, I think... And I also think it is actually more realistic. I mean, I think one of the reasons we like fantasy and sci-fi is because it's escapist and we can do crazy stuff. But actually, What percentage of problems in your life do you solve with violence? You know, hopefully not many.
None.
Yeah. I think sometimes when I can't get the lid off a jar, like there's a degree of violence that needs to enter into that moment. But apart from that, so yeah, I think I agree with you. I think those are, I think not, I think because it's more realistic in some ways, there's actually a real richness that you can discover from diving into that stuff. So there we go. I think we've discussed quite a lot about that. That was The Hands of the Emperor by Victoria Goddard. I wanted to ask you, Judith, a little bit more about your own work, if that's all right.
Yes, okay.
Tell us a bit more about the Uncharted series.
It's a lost fleet story, basically. It's a six book sequence. I rather think of it as series one. It feels like fan fiction for a 1970s TV show, like original Trek or original Battlestar Galactica. I like to think it has that sort of feel to it. So they are basically nice characters, mostly in finding themselves in difficult situations and resolving them. But I like to write romances, so I tend to tell each book as a different romance. So it's two people having a dealing with a problem in a very large setting, and dealing with a particular aspect of it.
And is there violence in the setting?
Almost none. I would like no, there isn't. There is some because clearly one cannot have adventure without there being a certain amount of.
Or at least a threat of it, like that can be really powerful.
I was desperately trying to remember whether anybody actually gets killed on the page, and I don't think they do. Likewise, what relationship there is between people tends to be very much behind closed doors, or even they don't actually get that far in the book. It's just that they have a relationship building that is obviously going to become something more at a later date. But all the books are interlinked, so you get the same characters turning up in all of them, and they are a diverse group. There are different gender orientations, different sexual orientations. I write straight romance, but there are other romances going on in the background, so it's a much broader world. I just like to read fiction that isn't dystopian.
Yeah, the previous episode of this book I read was on The Dispossessed by Ursula Le Guin, and that's of an anarchist utopia. And again, it was really interesting exploring not a dystopia, where things actually work and are nice. Because I think I agree with you. I think most sci-fi, like I am 50 books into the 40K Horus Heresy series, which is just a vast, evil, grim, dark dystopia that's getting worse and getting corrupted by chaos. And then all around them, there's the fallen, shattered, broken, like alien empires that also were dystopian. And I agree. I think nice, good things eventually happening to nice people who deserve them. Like, do you know what I mean? It's quite nice to actually. But reading's relaxing and writing's relaxing as well. And it can be nice to do that in a nice way.
I think the world can be quite threatening, and unpleasant things are going on rather a lot at the moment, and that reading sometimes should be an escape from that, so that reading lets you believe that there is a positive future.
I completely agree. I think we at Beyond Cataclysm, which is obviously the name of our publishing company, the reason we're called Beyond Cataclysm, even that, I mean, it's a quote from John Wyndham's Day of the Triffids, but actually there's an element to, and there's a full quote which I've quoted too many times in episodes, so I'm not going to quote again, but it talks about humanity thinking themselves not able to hit cataclysm. But actually, I think one of the reasons I like it just as a phrase, beyond cataclysm, there's a hope there, isn't there? That actually, even as disaster happens, like we and even if disaster is massive, there's things we can there's elements of hope that we can see within that too. So this has been it's been wonderful talking to you, Judith. I like I say, I was on a panel next to you, and I kind of just loved you. I just thought you were amazing. And
oh,
so
thank
I was
you.
Like, let's hear more. So yes, we have talked about Hands of the Emperor by Victoria Goddard. I've been Chris Lowry. You can find me at allaboutchris.org or on socials as at CM Lowry author. Judith, where can we find you?
Okay, you can find me on Facebook as J.A. Mortimore author, on Instagram, I think that's Judith Mortimore, and I have a webpage, jamortimore.com, where you can download a free introductory novella to the Uncharted series.
That is very attractive, and I will be going there basically right now to do that, I think. This has been a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm. If you enjoyed this, please consider checking out, we've mentioned it, our other podcast, What is Roleplay, where we look at roleplay with the same kind of floaty, chatty style, and we take a very beginner-friendly approach. Please consider giving us 5-star reviews on podcast platforms, because then 1 billion people will hear this podcast and we'll all become millionaires or something. Our aim for Beyond Cataclysm is to sustainably pay Dave, our sound engineer and in-house artist, and you can support us by backing our Patreon at patreon.com/beyondcataclysm, or by buying our awesome stuff at beyondcataclysm.co.uk. That is all from me. Thank you for having us. Would you like any last words, Judith?
Just thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. You've just listened to This Book I Read, hosted by me, CM Lowry, and starring Judith Mortimer. Find out more about us, our podcasts, opportunities for submissions to our projects, and more at beyondcataclysm.co.uk. Thanks for listening.